everyone, and welcome to the OfSec Podcast. I'm your host, TJ Nall, and I'm the Community Manager for Offensive Security. We hope you all enjoyed your holiday season and are enjoying the new year so far. For this episode, we welcome Kai, aka ShadowBits, who is the founder and Chief Security Architect at Black Cipher Security. Now, I've known Kai for the past few years, and he's always brought a great amount of wisdom and has a passion for helping others in the InfoSec community. So get ready to learn a thing or two when it comes to running your own pen testing firm or how he compromises computer networks as we welcome him to the stage. Kai, it's great to have you here, and thank you for joining the OfSec Podcast.
Thanks, TJ. Good to see you again. It's been a little too long, man.
It has been really too long. But I can't wait to see you when we go to ShmooCon.
So, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So, Kai, the first question I want to ask you is, you know, what piqued your interest in joining the information security field?
Oh, boy. Let's see the best way to answer this. My first computer that I touched, I want to say it was in 1985. I was 10 years old. And I believe it was around that time, maybe shortly after, I saw War Games. You know, that movie right there is what really, you know, piqued my interest in computers. And then, you know, I just kind of messed with computers on and off, you know, throughout, you know, my younger years. And then I remember in college, you know, the World Wide Web coming out. I'm aging myself, but yeah. And then, you know, there was the movie Sneakers, which really did it for me, and probably for many, many in this industry. You know, that's kind of the first introduction to, you know, the OfSec community and you know, the red team tactics and all that. So that's really what piqued my interest early on. And then obviously the movie Hackers as well. So.
Gotcha. So those movies were really just a big inspiration for you to get into the field, to learn more about hacking and, you know, just trying to dabble with things, right?
Absolutely. Because like in those times, you know, you had, you know, and I put out a tweet about this, I want to say a couple of years ago that I think it went somewhat viral, but you know, there was that period, you know, where I want to say it's like cyberspace, for lack of a better word, was very new. Mm-hmm. There was still, you know, so much to explore, and there still is, but I just feel like the mind state back then just, it had its own vibe to it, right? Like there weren't a whole lot of tools. Like you had to go to Barnes and Noble to get these huge thick, you know, Linux manuals and security manuals to really understand things. And now like you can just go, you know, anywhere online, right? You can pretty much pull a manual for anything. You can pull virtually any tool. Whereas before, you know, we had to really dig into physical books.
Right. That makes sense.
And you know, anyway, so it was, there also wasn't a whole lot of security, right? So like, you know, the whole thing, like with the blue boxes and making the phone calls and all that, that was like, you know, it's like security and, you know, law enforcement and all that, you know, we're just kind of like figuring things out. Like you could go to Radio Shack, right? And like, you could, you know, take a walkie talkie, right, or a scanner, and you can put a bigger crystal in it, and then you can gain access to, you know, to the police frequencies and stuff. So it's like there was a lot of cool stuff like back then that I just feel, and maybe it's just my age, right? Maybe it's just what I went through. I don't know. I wonder if like the kids nowadays, they grow up, can actually feel that or not. I don't know. It sounds kind of weird, but I just remember that world just being so amazing to me, like just wanting to, you know, get into it. You know, and now payphones are gone and all of that. So.
Mm-hmm. So like, you know, like you said, we were talking about going to Barnes and Noble, right? Or going to a bookstore, right? And you were grabbing like, you know, the Linux books that were there or all the manuals.
2600, you know.
Right. Yeah. 2600 series, you know, were those like some resources that you really used to kind of get yourself started in the field? I mean, you look at like nowadays, right? Everyone's got all these different platforms, like you said. They could find the man pages like easily online, get the tools that they need. You know, you had to start from like scratch really for a lot of things that you were doing back in the field.
Yeah, so absolutely. And you know, I remember frack, you know, just it was just like that joy of discovery, right? Like you know, you would read a book, like hacking had such like a crazy aura around it, right? It was a mystique, I think is the perfect word, is the mystique. And I think a lot of people are attracted to you know, hacking and cybersecurity for that very reason. Still, I think it happens today, but I just don't have that perspective because I'm older, right? I don't really understand, you know, what the younger kids are doing and how they're seeing the world of hacking. You know, and hate to, you know, bring up such a hated person in the community, right? I'm not going to mention any names, but someone who was very popular in the media around those times with some of their, you know, you know, exploits and what have you, and you know, the whole, you know, guy chasing him down and whatnot, you know, was very big too. I mean, that pulled in a lot of people, right? You know, I remember seeing covers of Newsweek magazine, you know, with one or both of them, and other, you know, famous people, you know, during that time. And it just really just, you know, pulled you in. It was just, at least that was my experience. I remember, you know, the big hackers, you know, Loft Heavy Industries and all of that, you know, all the people that like the younger people would look up to. I mean, I don't know. Those were really good times. I really miss that energy and that vibe. I still get it sometimes, you know, from the cons, you know, certain conversations, but
That's like
definitely
hacker history almost with all that stuff that you've gone through, right? And with that same type of motivation and dedication that was there, you know. So it makes sense. So, you know, with the resources that you've kind of basically learned, you kind of took together, right? And then, you know, your inspiration for, you know, all the different hacker movies like Sneakers, Hackers, War Games, right? What made you decide you wanted to start your own pen testing firm?
so that came later on. So let me see. I think it was like 2013. I was working at Lockheed Martin and doing sysadmin work, and I wasn't really in a primarily security focused role, but I was studying, right? I was messing with things in the background. And I think it was like the Target hack is where I was like, this is not going away. This is only going to get worse, right? This is going to get bigger. And that's when I started. I just had this idea. I was like, wow, like I want to start a consulting business. And I remember thinking of, you know, like domain names, and I was like, all right, I'm going to register this domain. And then I started thinking about like colors and, you know, so it just was born, right? And you know, when you talk about the resources, right, around that time, you know, there was OFSEC, there was EC Council, and you know, one of the funny stories I told on another podcast is like, you know, when I wanted to open a consulting firm, I was like, all right, well, you know, I need to, you know, get some certification. So I was like, you know, what am I going to do? You know, so I started researching, and I end up, the first thing I started focusing on was the CEH, right, from EC Council, because that was like big then, right? It was like DoD, right? You know, these are the people, you know, you need to go after. So I remember at the time, and a lot of people don't know this, but McAfee created McAfee Antivirus when he was working for Lockheed Martin. So at the time, that's who Lockheed Martin was using, was McAfee Antivirus. So I had the CEH course, right, on a USB, and I was like, all right, I'm going to take this into work. and I'm going to study while I'm at work. So inside of there, you had all kinds of malware, all kinds of hacking tools, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I come into work like I typically do. I go to get my coffee, but I plug in the USB and then I start copying the files over to my local computer. And then I go into the kitchen and I get my coffee. When I come back, my screen is bloody red, right? From all the antivirus alerts, right? It was hundreds and hundreds of fucking alerts, right? So I pull out the USB. I'm like, holy shit. I'm like trying to close all the fucking windows, right? And then my phone rings. And I can see it's the InfoSec department, right? And this like head of security, like she's calling me from like Gaithersburg, Maryland, right? And I'm in New Jersey, right? And I was like, she's like, yeah, we have all these alerts going off on your computer. I said, yeah. I said, I made a mistake. I'm taking this course, you know? And she's like, yeah, you know. She's like, I have the CEH. I can tell by the file names. Right. She's like, look, just try to be more careful next time.
Yeah.
But it was at that point, you know, that I came up with the company name, and, you know, I really didn't know shit about running a business. And I just had the idea, but I have the type of personality that I was like, you know what? I'm going to do this. I'm going to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And that's one message that, you know, I want to convey to anybody. Whenever you want to do something, whatever it is, if it's going after a certification, if it's getting a job at a specific company, have that desire and just follow through. You know, like too many people, they tell themselves like, oh, I can't do this. Well, you can't do it if you never get started. If you have that belief, you know, and it may take a while, but the thing is, even if you don't have what it takes right then and there, you will over time, because as you take a step forward and you make a mistake, that mistake is then going to educate you and tell you what you were missing. And then now it's like a video game, right? It's like a role-playing game. You're trying to get into this castle, right? But you have to talk to this person who gives you this jewel. And that jewel then allows you to go over here and pick this thing up, right? It's a cumulative thing. And that's what people have to remember, whether, you know, again, certification, company, you know, getting muscles, losing weight, whatever it is, one step at a time, eventually you're going to get there. Yeah. So I don't want to dwell too much on that.
So that situation, right, is really what inspired you to like start your own pen testing firm, start getting really more into the field, learning things, right. You know, and on top of it, with the firm that you're at now, what's your main area of focus for, you know, the offensive side of cybersecurity? Is it like network pen testing, web app pen testing, physical, wireless, red teaming, all the above, right? What do you like to specialize in?
So I am an offensive minded person, right? I love attack. And personally, I believe that offset people, so whoever falls into that spectrum that is carrying out an attack, right? Whether it's just a regular pen tester or it's a red teamer that is trying to evade detection in the pursuit of a goal. Whether it's the people that fall into that spectrum or it is actual attackers, criminal attackers out in the real world. These are the two people, the two groups rather, that move the security ball forward, right? Because they challenge assumptions.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you are challenging a security assumption, you are not moving the ball forward. You just aren't. And that's why I think that OSSEC, you know, as an industry, as a discipline, moves the security ball forward the most. And it's the best. And that's why I like it. My focus is physical security. Network pen testing. I am not a great web app pen tester. We have a web app guy for that. But mainly what I do is I focus on strategy and tactics, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it is, you know, trying to find the best approach, the angle of attack to get into a building or to, you know, social engineer, whatever it may be, that's where my focus is. I have studied strategy and tactics for decades. I used to play chess in New York City, Blitz Chess. So if anyone's familiar with, Searching for Bobby Fischer, any of those kinds of movies where you're seeing people parry in Washington Square Park on the clock, it's under pressure, making the right moves. But also tons of study, in the arts of war and all of that stuff, which has been extremely helpful. Anything that we go to do, if we want to be successful at it, we need to do a lot of thought, right? If we don't, if we just, you certainly can have some blind luck. You could just go make an attempt to do something, boom, you're successful that first time. But if you want to repeat success, you have to have a tried and true plan. You have to have strategies and tactics that you know work. I mean, take, AV evasion. You might be good one day, next day it doesn't work, right? So you can't just, say, okay, I figured things out. Life is all about change. So one of the key things to be good in offset is that you have to be skilled at adaptation. You have to be able to adapt on the fly. You take social engineers, for example, right? They need to, right? They're confronted with somebody. They need to, at a moment's notice, be able to come up with an excuse, right? Be able to answer a question. There's a saying in the art of war, no plan survives first contact with the enemy, right? No matter how much you think you have thought about every possible thing, right? That you have figured everything out, there's going to be something that you didn't consider. And that thing can throw a monkey wrench in your entire plan. So, the skilled attacker has to be able to adapt, right, to those changing circumstances, right? So, when I'm more like in a leadership role now. I intend to get more, back into the real technical things. But most of the time, what I'm doing now is just, kind of leading engagements, kind of just saying, okay, go do this, do this. I'm not really getting my hands dirty so much anymore, which is fine. But I love the adrenaline rush. Still from getting a shell or getting into a building or something like that.
Yeah. So I want to kind of touch on some key points you put in, right? You talked about, a pen tester trying to be adaptive, right? You also talked about, you'd like to do physical pen tests. That's one of your things that you'd like to do. Can you be able to provide a scenario or a story on an environment that you assessed, where you learned those skills, right? When you learned to find ways to build yourself up with that.
What do you mean exactly? So,
So what I
I
mean
mean,
by that is, can you provide a scenario of, let's say you were on a physical pen test, right? And you had a situation that you had all together and planned, right? And that when you went ahead to execute that plan, it failed, right? Or something stopped there. What did you do to overcome that?
so I'm going to tell a story that doesn't involve me, right? But involves an employee, right? Because it illustrates the point, right? We both know this person, Dan, but he was in a situation where we were doing a social engineering engagement. It also had a physical component to it, but it was during business hours. But anyway, one of the, you're probably familiar with the whole ruse of, the fake, employee, spilling coffee on the resume, malicious USB, walking in trying to get, the person at the desk to plug it in. So part of this particular engagement was for, a local retail company. And Dan goes in and he attempts, this ruse, right, to get the woman to plug in the malicious USB. And she says, no, that's against company policy. I can't do that. So we're like, okay, right? So pen testing, you validate or refute a security control. So we validated, the security control. However, she turns around and then says, if you email it to me, right? So it had a malicious Word document, right? With a payload inside. So she says, if you email it to me, I'll print it out for you. So we're like, well, we'll still get execution, right? Regardless. So he then, we didn't account for this scenario. So then what he does is he gets on the phone. I'm in the parking lot. Well, I'm not actually in the parking lot, like block away. What he does is he calls me and he's like, he says, hey, honey, right? Because he's in the lobby. Can you send me email a copy to this particular email address so she can print out my resume? So I'm like, shit, pull out my laptop. I connected to my phone, right, the hotspot, and I email him the doc or email the document to her. So she opens it up. Now, because of the rules of engagement, we don't use phony names. Right. So we put our real names in there in case, the cops come or whatever. We have ID that matches everything. Right. So she ends up, she opens it. We don't get code execution, but she looks at the name and she says, are you so-and-so's son? He doesn't know who this woman is. She knew who he was. Right. And so he's like, yeah. And she's like, I used to babysit you when you were a kid.
Oh my
Like you were
God.
a baby. Right?
Mm-hmm.
We're like, what the hell? This is such a crazy situation, right? Because what are the odds that this kid grows up, gets a job at a cybersecurity consulting firm, ends up doing a social engineering engagement on the woman that babysat him when he was a baby? Right. But anyway, that is a perfect example of how you have to be able to adapt. You've got to be able to, adapt on the fly. You can't just be like, oh, it's just over. You have to think, how can I continue, towards my goal? But and the other thing that I want to stress is this is why, you can't substitute experience, right? You have to get out there. You have to find yourself in situations where you didn't actually account for the way things are going. Because that when you don't account for something and then it occurs, now you have increased your awareness and your knowledge. So people that do that habitually are always at a greater advantage than the people that don't want to make any mistakes, right? So it's just like military units, right? Military units will go out, right? They'll be briefed, they have a plan, they have a goal. They'll go out and carry the objective, right? So then they're working towards, their goal, and then there's some shit that they didn't account for, right? Intelligence, didn't pick this up, that there was a swamp here, whatever it was, that there was a landmine here. They didn't pick up things and they have to adapt. But then those mistakes are used to then feed intelligence going forward, right? And that is why the ability to adapt and make mistakes that are hopefully not fatal are so important.
I think that's a really great story that you shared, how Dan was able to adapt to a situation that he couldn't get through, but you were able to help leverage him on trying to get that file to pass through. But in the end of it, right, you also had the outcome of where the lady at the front desk also knew who Dan was. And that also sparked a whole another situation that you also had to, he also had to overcome in that too, to be adaptive with it.
Right.
Stories like this, I think, are incredible. I think they're great that we can be able to share them, and also tips and ideas that we share too. So I have a question I want to kind of add on to this, is like, do you think it's important for others in the InfoSec community to share their knowledge? And if so, where do you think they should start?
I think it is absolutely important for people to share their knowledge. There is a quote. And I think I may have read it on the OSSEC blog, be honest with you, that says a good teacher shows you where to look, but not what to see. And it's very important, right? That quote really nails it. And everyone that has undergone any kind of experience with OFSEC as far as their training has been pissed off at some point by the response, try hard, right? Now, there's nothing wrong with that, right? Because humans want to know things, they want to learn quickly. And when someone says, try harder, it's not something most people want to hear. However, when you give someone an answer, you take away their joy of discovery. People need to figure things out on their own. It also sticks with you when you figure it out on your own, as opposed to someone just saying, hey, do this to get around Windows Defender. It doesn't really stick, and you don't really understand why you're able to do whatever you're doing. So, when it comes to other people teaching others, I think that it is very important. So people can understand, okay, there were others that are like me that are interested in the same things that I'm interested in, pursuing the same career goals that I am. These are the things that they have done. It helps pave the way. It sheds light and it provides guidance, right? So people that have no idea, like, when you're working out, how do you know that you're doing it right? The way that you know that you're doing it right is that you go and you look at a blog or you watch a video of Schwarzenegger, pushing, this weight or pulling this weight, and you are doing the exact same thing that he is doing. You are following the same diet, right? So then you are like, okay, well, if I follow that formula, then I should be able to achieve those or similar results. So when you have people that are posting videos, on YouTube, when people are sharing blog posts, when people are tweeting, all of these things help provide guidance to those that are coming up. And I think it is an absolutely important thing to do. However, I'm not going to move into an area of oversharing because that gets into a very heated discussion. But I definitely think that there should be, an approach that teaches people how to think, but doesn't teach people necessarily what to think, right? Because everyone is unique and they should come up with their own, unique way of doing things.
Yeah, like they should have their own strategy, or
Correct.
their own methodology of how they should be approaching something, right, that they've never seen before.
Right. And it becomes your own. Chess is a perfect example. So when you are learning to play chess, there's three main components of chess. There's the opening, the middle, and the end game. Okay. So the way people get better is they study chess games of the masters, right? So they'll study particular openings, they'll study middle game, they'll study end game. However, each person has their own unique implementation of, say, the Queen's Gambit, right? So, they may copy and do, say, the first four, three, five moves, whatever. But once you enter into that middle game, it is completely unique.
No, that's interesting. That's a great point that you made out of that. With the idea of, trying to get started, like sharing ideas, for the InfoSec community, bringing knowledge to the table. Are there any new community projects that you're doing or anything that you're working on, at the start of this new year?
I am. So one of the things that I think, and I've heard from others, peers in the industry, people that are way smarter, way more successful than me, I have heard people state that one of the most difficult things for people in this industry, in the offset side, is, and even the defensive side, is people don't know how to think like a bad person. And that is very, very important. Because the whole goal of any security, of anything, whether it's physical protection of the president, whether it is physical security of the jewelry and the other valuables in your home, whether it is your own personal security when you are walking, through the streets of a major city or in a foreign country, or it is, your passwords, or it is a trade secret in a company, regardless of what it is, okay? You have to have a thorough understanding of your own vulnerabilities, and you have to understand the capabilities of threats. And, threats range from super basic, right? So, we've got our standard phishing email, right? For Wells Fargo Bank, they get sprayed out to everybody who doesn't even have a Wells Fargo account, right? You get it and you're like, this doesn't apply to me. I don't even have a Wells Fargo account, right? So it's a spray and pray. It's not a sophisticated attack. Then you have something that is highly sophisticated that matches you in every way, perfect timing and everything. And I think there was a woman, I don't know if it was a Black Hat talk in Europe, I believe it was, but her whole premise was that a phishing email in the right context and the right timing will get anybody, anybody, right? So with this whole spectrum of threats, what I am working on is a book. And this book is going to focus, I think where I've narrowed it down is I was looking at the cyber kill chain and I was like, there's too much argument and the on every step, right? Like sometimes you see, privilege escalation, before lateral movement. And that's not necessarily the case. Sometimes you may do lateral movement beforehand. Sometimes you might not do it at all. So then I was like, I don't want to have lock myself into this kill chain. And then I've got people like, hey, this is wrong. I don't want to get into all that. So I put this tweet out and I got some very interesting responses. And one of them was the unified kill chain or the in through out methodology, right? Which is more realistic, right? So I think I'm going to build it around that. Right, so in through and out. But with that said, I'm going to focus on all the aspects of that from an attacker's perspective, but teach people how to think in a very strategic and tactical way for each phase of that engagement, right? From recon all the way out to exfiltration. And the breakdown is going to be strategies and tactics that are leveraging philosophical principles. Because if you are thinking about each phase of the attack in a very strategic as well as the tactical way, you are much, much less susceptible to making mistakes, right? Conversely, defenders who are charged with, because we know as attackers, now certainly you can be on a team with someone specializing in initial access, someone that is very skilled in exfiltration. You might have an expert that is more focused on evading, defenses, network defense, host-based defense, whatever. But for the most part, defenders, will typically be charged with a particular aspect of it, right? So you might have a SOC analyst, that's focused on EDR, right? Looking at a particular thing. They may have more of a myopic focus, but each person needs to be able to look at an attack in such a way that they can say, have we evicted them? Could they have use misdirection, right? So if defenders are thinking in a much deeper way about their own network, about their environment, they're more likely to be successful in protecting it. Because really, if you look at it from a yin and yang perspective, which is supposed to be the whole, you have, say, defense with a little bit of offense, and a lot of offense with a little bit of defense. And those two energies work together to create the concept of security. So if you are looking from it from a holistic perspective, that is where you achieve true success, in my humble opinion. And I'm going to tell you this just from a martial arts perspective. There are what are called hard and soft arts. So you have like Tai Chi, for example, you have Aikido, things that are just kind of, they take force and they redirect it. But then you have things like Taekwondo, karate, where it's like, these hard blocks, and if you aren't tough and you get hit, it's going to hurt a lot. Whereas the softer arts focus on redirecting energy as opposed to taking that energy, head on. This is what allows, like, say, a small statured woman to redirect the energy of a 240-pound man who is, solid muscle. She's not going to beat him by taking on his energy directly, but she could easily redirect his energy with no problem, right? And use that to overcome. So in cybersecurity, security in general, those concepts still apply.
That's going to be an interesting community project that you work on, trying to focus on all these concepts and figure out what different chains will work for everyone, and also try to educate people on the different chains, that they can be able to use and, apply it into the work skills that they're doing. So it is pretty neat just thinking about it a little bit. So I want to ask this. Oh, did you have something?
No.
Oh, so I have this last question I usually ask every guest speaker who comes on for the OSSEC podcast. And then, I know you mentioned a couple things you like to do outside of OSSEC, like martial arts, chess. So outside of OSSEC, are there any hobbies or things you'd like to do?
One thing that has been very beneficial to me lately is walking and listening to audiobooks. Because when we all talk about, like, I don't suffer it, but I know a lot of people do, is burnout, right? And there's a whole we hack health, right? It's very, very important for human beings to be balanced, right, in what they do. And so, getting out and exercising, but still growing your mind at the same time is something that I found to be very powerful, right? So you get out and walk, it helps clear your mind, right? Because you're releasing endorphins, right? You're getting the blood flow, even if you were to run. And then listening to audiobooks at the same time, you're growing mentally, right? So that's something like I've loved doing as of lately. My other thing is riding my motorcycle, right? I love to go fast, and it's very refreshing, right? I know you don't ride, but for those that do, they know that when you go out 15, 20 minutes, regardless of what kind of day you're having, you come back and you feel like your batteries have been recharged. It's an amazing feeling. Certainly, you always have to be on the lookout for people that, don't respect motorcycles, but other than that, that's something I get a lot of joy out of.
Well, I'm glad you enjoy those things and you get the joy out of, being able to ride a bike or sorry, motorcycle, and then also, getting to listen to audiobooks and walking. I think that's really a good thing that I think some people could get into, they're trying to find a hobby for something easy to start with for sure.
Yeah, and there is a ton of stuff. Like everyone's different. Some people may say, hey, I just want to zone out. I don't want to think about anything, and they want to listen to just a novel. You can certainly do that. But there is, if you like stuff that's going to help you professionally, like you can listen to books on public speaking. There's all kinds of, topics that you can grow from, right? How to, converse with people better, right? There's a ton of stuff that can improve your life and make you better, make your blade sharper, so to speak.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more to that. Well, Kai, I want to thank you again for taking the time to be here and to be on the Offsec podcast with us. And I also want to wish you a happy new year to you as well. And also, hopefully, you'll be able to share some more community projects or things that you do once I see you and we talk again, of course.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, and it's been a pleasure.
Awesome. Well, to our listeners, I want to thank you also for taking the time to listen to this episode. We hope you enjoyed it and were able to gain some value from it. Be sure to check out Offense Security's website for more information on these topics, courses, or future updates by going to offensive-security.com.